Good evening, everyone. This is David Noble and Dalgetty Bay, and welcome to the first episode of a new show that's taking place on a new Professional Learning for Teachers channel here on Radio Edutalk. And I'm delighted for the first show on the new channel to welcome Lynn Jones. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Good evening.
Okay, and this evening we're going to be hearing about some work that Lynn's been doing recently, some practitioner inquiry, or we might use various other interchangeable terms to describe the action research that Lynn was involved in, looking at vertical groups in the setting that she was working in at the time. So Lynn, it would be great, don't want to mess around. I'll just say that if anybody wants to get in touch with the show, if you're listening to the live stream or indeed listening to the recording, if you've got some advice or reflections in your own practice, or if you've got a comment or question for Lynn, then please get in touch. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, just pop something up and include the hashtag edutalk. I'll explain a bit more about this new channel on edutalk later on, but I'm sure listeners have come along this evening to listen to the great work that Lynn's been involved in. Just to start off then, Lynn, could you just give us a brief background to your career in education?
Okay, I've been a primary teacher for 14 years now. Prior to starting as a primary teacher, I had done a degree in languages, but I came as a primary teacher. It took me a wee while to get in, but I started my career off in Dundee and then came down to West Lothian. So the past 10 years I've been teaching in a primary school in West Lothian. I'm about to start my dissertation for my master's, actually. So this action research that we're going to speak about was kind of part of the second year of my master's.
Okay, and could you just start off by kind of introducing what I suppose what the title was to your research, mm-hmm. and maybe sort of clarify some of the kind of key terms? You know, we're talking about vertical groups, but I would be conscious that maybe some listeners might not be aware about what we mean by that.
Okay, so the title of the project in the end, it took a while to get there, but in the end I called it vertically challenged, what do vertical groups look like in my setting and what has been their impact? Vertical groups are where there's a mixed age grouping. In our setting, it was actually P1s to P7s came together one afternoon in a week. So it's vertical in that they're all different ages rather than, you know, the regular P1s of an age. The reason I decided to kind of investigate that a little bit was because it felt to me at the time as if it had come out of nowhere. Idea that came down from our management team. It seemed as if it had been imposed a little bit and it hadn't been explained. I certainly wasn't quite sure what it was all about. And I have to say, if I hadn't been doing my master's anyway, I probably would have just got on with it and maybe groused a little bit in the staff room, what's all this about? But because we were being asked by my university tutors to kind of find something that was maybe worrying or niggling at you a little bit in your classroom practice, we were encouraged to kind of identify something that we weren't quite happy about, then set about investigating it with a degree of rigor. So as I'd felt that this was something new and something untried and seemed to come out of left field, and management thought it was a good idea, but they hadn't really explained, I felt, they hadn't really explained why they thought it was a good idea or what the aim of it was. But then they did a bit of vertical groups for a couple of weeks and then they left the rest of the staff to take it on for the rest of the year. So I wasn't quite sure why. And there was another concern that I had as well, because this vertical groups, the way we ran it at that time, P1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s, 7s, all in a group I worried that actually the P1s might feel overwhelmed and might feel actually possibly intimidated by being surrounded by older children, because it turned out through interviewing the head teacher that her idea was that this would spread pupil voice. It would broaden pupil voice. So teachers and eventually management would hear from a lot more of the student body, as it were, because they would be contributing to lots of discussions on lots of different topics, lots of different subjects. So it would be better than, or well, no, it would be different to, let's put it that way, it would be different to the pupil council, which was maybe two children from each class would be elected to go. So that group was very small, so effectively only 14 children out of a student population of over 200. So, you know, it was the idea, I found out subsequently from the head teacher, was to broaden pupil voice through mixing up children and instituting actually the new kind of thing, as well as mixing up the children, was instituting some student leadership. So there was, at the start, there was P6 children and P7 children who were given a leadership role. They were, you know, they were actually given the title of vertical group leader, the P7s, and vertical group co-leader for some of the P6s. And that didn't even involve all the P6s and 7s. But some of them had this leadership role, and there was an expectation that they would actually lead the sessions, these afternoons, that they would get some information about, say, fair trade or children's rights, the UNCRC document, the Convention for Children's Rights. So there would be some training for them, and then they would be expected to lead a session supported by a teacher, and possibly a classroom assistant would be there as well.
Okay.
So it was all a bit new, and it all seemed a bit radical. And I just felt, given the opportunity coming from my master's, that actually I wanted to know if it was working, if there were things that maybe hadn't been considered before it was put into place. Mm-hmm. So that's where it started.
And just before we go into kind of research itself then, Lynn, so just to clarify, these were sessions that were taking place for a kind of short period within the school week, but short but regular periods within the school week, and there was a citizenship focus. Why was it are you aware about why it was decided that that should be where vertical groupings were tried out by management, or indeed were they at the same time being tried out in other areas of the school or the curriculum?
I think, this only really became clear to me through interviewing the head teacher for the purpose of the research, but I think it was to do with the head teacher's vision. And she saw this multi-age grouping practice as a way of broadening pupil voice, as I was said before, and also actually to improve relationships right across the school between pupils of different ages and stages, but equally between pupils and teachers. Because what happened in the first year was that each group came to the same teacher every week, and so therefore the input or the session was on a different subject mostly. Some subjects kind of lasted a couple of weeks, but mostly it was something different each week. So I think the citizenship element was to support that, and actually talking about things like children's rights and fair trade. Those things are if you're informing the children about that and getting them to take action almost, it does become a real thing, that the decisions that they make, once they've been informed about that, that is citizenship in action. It's real life. So I think that was the thinking behind that. It changed subsequently, but that was what was happening the first year.
Mm-hmm. Was there a set vision of as to how these sessions would run? Then would sessions be primarily pupil leader led, or was it a kind of 50-50 activity with the sort of designated member of staff, or were there a kind of senior pupil role or something else?
Well, what actually happened was that there was one member of staff who had a responsibility. She had an out of class kind of role during the week, by and large. So she took this responsibility on board, and it was largely she planned a session based on whether it be send my sister to school or diversity or a consultation around a school issue, whether it was sports day or the vision and values for the school. So she would plan a session. She would train. She had time in her timetable to give some kind of training to the P6 and 7 student leader, the pupil leaders. And then once that had happened in advance of the Wednesday afternoon slot, teachers would be given an outline of what the student leaders were going to do and what was the aim of that session, so that they knew or they could start thinking about how to support that. And then on the Wednesday afternoon, then the children would all come along. And the idea was that the children, the student leaders, the P6s and 7s with that leadership role, would take responsibility for that session with support. So if things were not running smoothly, or if something was a bit confused, or there was management issues, then the teacher could guide and support. That was the intention at the start.
And your initial research was asking the question, what do vertical groups look like in your setting, and what impact have they had? Can you say a little about the kind of key literature that you delved into around that time, and also how you went about your initial research?
Okay, so I read things by Joan Ruddock, and Ruddock and Flotter was a key text, and the other one that really caught my imagination because it was very visual for me was Roger Hart, and he did a piece of research for UNICEF actually, and in 1992, and one of the things that came out of that was what he called a ladder of participation, where you should be able to almost rank activities that children were involved in as to how much genuine participation there was. So I'm looking at a copy of that now, and the bottom three rungs on the ladder, as it were, he classifies as non-participation from the children at all. His labels for those rungs, it starts with manipulation, where the children are actually taken advantage of. And then the next one is decoration, and where he's saying, for example, where children might be told to sing or dance at something, at an event, but they don't really know what the event is. They're not really understanding what the reason for them being there. And then he also classifies the third step as tokenism, where it looks as if the children have been given a real voice, but they haven't really had an opportunity to, they're not informed enough to develop their own opinions. So there is, okay, well, it's one step up from decoration on his ladder. But where genuine participation starts on, according to Hart, on the fourth rung, he calls this the assigned but informed step, where the children have got a little bit more information. You know, they've been told that they're going to do something, but they have some information as to why and how it's going to happen. A bit further up, so this is a higher degree of participation, then would be the children would be consulted as well as informed. So then they could express real opinions and feelings as to why, you know, they might or might not want to participate. And then going further up, we've got shared decision making with adults. And then the next one, child initiated as well as child directed. And then at the very top, you know, your most pure form of participation, if you like, child initiated sharing decisions with adults. So it was that kind of continuum, if you like. And this visual element really appealed to me, because I wasn't convinced that what we were doing or how we were going about it was as participatory as our head teacher aspired.
So can you go on to talk then about your methods to gather data? Yeah.
I did what I suppose a lot of beginner researchers do, as I just collected loads, had far too much, but it was all very interesting. So, for example, I collected to collect opinions from children. I tried different ways, and one of the most revealing actually was asking the children to draw pictures and create drawings of, and I just gave them a simple title, what do vertical groups look like? So and in the end, practically every child in the school from P1 and up drew me a picture of what they considered vertical groups to look like. Another way, I collected different information from some of the pupil leaders, most of the pupil leaders actually, something like called a PMI evaluation, which is P meaning positive and the M meaning minus and the I interesting. And this is a technique that I learned on a critical skills course a good many years ago. But I asked all the pupil leaders just to write anything that they felt was positive about their experience as pupil leaders or in vertical groups. Just write whether it was a sentence or several different points, and then anything that they felt was negative about their experience, and then anything that didn't fall into those categories but they just found interesting. And then I kind of collated all of those, so I've got a summary sitting in front of me now of the different things, and so things like that from the children went alongside some one-to-one interviews. So I did a one-to-one interview with the head teacher, I did an interview with the member of staff who'd taken the responsibility of training and planning the sessions with the student leaders. I did a couple of other ones with teachers who were involved in supporting, because there was 12 groups overall, so there was 12 teachers involved. I did an interview with one of the teaching assistants as well, who was involved in supporting one of the groups. And then on top of that, because as I say, I got far too much in the end, but it was all interesting, I did a focus group with as many of the staff and non-teaching and non-teaching staff who were involved who could come on the particular day. And I have to admit, I found it all a bit nerve-wracking, and I was a bit embarrassed about going up to my colleagues and saying, oh, going to tell me about this, and I've got to do it with I'm going to go back to this word rigor again, but I've got to collect it ethically and all of this. And everybody's like, no, we'll just have a chat. It's like, no, I want to, you know, got to do it properly. So, but I was all a bit embarrassed about it all at the start. So I actually got them to ask each other the questions first, in a kind of walk, quite informal. They were kind of walking around the room, and whoever they bumped into, they would ask their question. Yeah. And it was actually it was a question that I'd made up, questionnaires. And actually it was the same questionnaires, some of the same questions that I'd put to the head teacher as well. And actually I'd answered those questions already in my professional journal that I was keeping at the time as part of my master's. So I'd answered all the questions in writing myself prior. The head teacher had answered those same questions as far as possible. And so to start with, the staff were asking each other. And then we all came together straight away after that kind of formal session. And they kind of reported to the whole group of teachers and teaching assistants, what the responses had been, and then if anybody wanted to add anything or expand on those comments, then there was an opportunity to do that. So of course, once I'd collected all the data, I recorded all of that discussion, by the way, I should have said that, and the interviews as well. So then I had to type it all up and transcribe it all. Kind of while that was happening, because I was had all these different bits of data I'd collected over time, I'd already started this whole coding thing and looking for themes and things that were similar and things that there was anomalies and maybe things that I'd expected to find that weren't there and all of this. So I kind of, across all of that data, I kind of picked four themes which I could identify across the piece. So there was, and I ended up colour coding these. Again, I'm quite visual, so that worked quite well. So I colour coded on the basis of four themes. There was this comments about student leadership or anything in the pictures that I could see that indicated that there was a recognition that students were leading. Mm-hmm. In the group, pupil voice, I was looking for things around that, the active citizenship that I've spoken about as well. And because the head teacher had this idea about improving relationships, I was also looking for any indication to do with socialization and relationships, really.
And so what were what were the findings from your initial research, and how did you go about sharing that with the wider school community?
Findings, really. So my initial concern had been about the P1s maybe feeling overwhelmed and intimidated by the older children. And from the data that I collected, it looked as if actually that wasn't the case at all. And I based that on the pictures, the drawings from the P1s. Or, you know, there were so many smiley faces and bright colours and big smiley suns in the top corner. And there didn't, I think there was one sad face, but it's the whole lot of other smiles. So it seemed to me, by and large, generally, that worry was largely unfounded. I think it may have been that I could have delved a bit deeper, that I could have maybe gone back to with the pictures, and if there was maybe taken a sample of those pictures and gone back to the child and asked them to talk to me about the picture and explain it a little bit more, or me explain what I thought, what my interpretation was, just to gauge whether I was on the right track with them. I was class committed. I didn't have that opportunity to do that. But certainly the staff felt as well information coming from the various interviews and discussions. The other staff were, even, you know, especially the P1 teachers, they had no worries. And supported by the pictures, I felt that actually that concern could be parked. The interesting thing that I hadn't expected that did come out was actually there was a big disconnect in other ways. And what one of them was between management, what they imagined the teacher's experience of vertical groups was, because where's that amazing quote from my head teacher, who was said something along the lines of that the staff have input beforehand. This is me quoting my head teacher. The staff have input beforehand and the leaders and co-leaders have been trained for anything that they had to take forward. So the head teacher thought that it was all running along quite smoothly, whereas in fact, a lot of teachers were saying things that most of the time the leaders don't know what they're doing. That's a quote that was repeated in various guises. And also the teachers felt that they weren't getting enough information about what each different session was ahead of time. So it might be that on a Wednesday lunchtime, before the Wednesday afternoon session, that was the first information that they'd got about what was happening straight after lunch. But because the pupil was supposed to be leading it, there maybe wasn't the, I don't know, maybe it's an assumption that, the teachers are professional enough that they can cope with anything. You know, they'll be able to support the pupils. But actually the teachers were expressing a little bit of worry and stress, actually, at not being, they didn't feel they were informed enough. And also, coming back to pupils, although the younger pupils seemed quite happy, there was this other kind of disconnect in that there was particular children who were mentioned in the course of the staff discussion, as the teachers categorically stated that these children, they weren't getting anything. They were hating vertical groups and weren't getting anything out of it. And particularly there was a young child who was a selective mute. I'd looked at all the photographs and film. I collected all the film footage and photographs of staff shared drive in school. And there was one particular picture of this. I think it was the only picture of this child in vertical groups. And it just broke your heart because it looked, she was sat at one end of the table and the other end of the table, the rest of the group seemed to be really involved in something. And she just looked so sad in this picture. And the teacher who was supporting her vertical group every week, she was adamant that that child wasn't getting anything out of vertical groups. There was a lot of discussion going on in the vertical groups all the time, but that child never took part. And, you know, as evidenced by that photograph, as I say, this teacher, who wasn't a class teacher, should be said, but no, that child is getting nothing out of it. She hates it. Can't get her to say a word. If you looked at her, the drawing that child did, that was one of the ones with the biggest, smiliest faces, the most colourful one. And I think that child even wrote something across hers, which vertical groups, I like vertical groups or something like this. There's certainly a positive comment, if I remember rightly. And it was like, wow, who knew? And until you actually went and asked that particular child, you know, it's a very open-ended, what does vertical groups look like? Her genuine response, you know, and she wasn't being expected to talk about it, but she could express it in that way. And my goodness, how eloquent. And there was another child that came up in the conversation amongst the teachers, who has ADHD. And so that was another, the teacher again for that boy's vertical group was like, no, he hates it. He finds it very difficult and really doesn't engage at all. And again, the picture that he drew was There is lots of children sat in a big circle, all of them smiling. I think he'd labelled his own name, and it was, you know, they were all smiling, but so he'd labelled himself and he was smiling. And again, he was getting something out of it, and the head teacher had wanted the development of relationships to be a theme, and it looked as if he was expressing that, you know, he was getting something of that out of it, even if it wasn't, it was on his own terms, let's put it that way. And, you know, this was when I realized actually it would have been nice to be able to go back to the child with their picture and try and extract a wee bit more of information if that interpretation was correct. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me as if unless you ask the children the right question, or let them express, maybe not even ask, but give them the freedom to express what they feel about things, it's only then that, you know, your assumptions aren't good enough. You can't just assume everything. You've got to have the proof there and to support your decision making, really.
And
so that was really interesting.
Can you now, in one of your papers, Lynn, you state that you plan to further improve the participatory democratic nature of vertical groups with colleagues.
Mm.
Now, by that, are you referring to the subsequent changes to vertical groups, which you then looked into again, you know, namely changing the kind of planning, I think it was a kind of planning process, wasn't
that's
it?
Right.
So rather than necessarily the research into that, could you tell us about the actual change that was made and then about you know, what your subsequent research showed up as being the sort of effectiveness of those changes?
As I said, in year one, there was 12 vertical groups with about 18, 19 children in, was the subject largely was different. On the back of the research and things that were said about, actually it came out that some of the pupil leaders didn't feel very supported and very confident either. And because the teachers had said a lot about not being feeling properly informed, there was a decision made. Right, so what happened was, let me roll back a wee bit. My head teacher gave me the opportunity to share the research, the vertically challenged research, the first part, with colleagues, which was very brave of her, really, because I did, you know, pick, I wouldn't say criticise, but, you know, highlighted something that kind of showed that things weren't running exactly as she thought. So that was very brave of her. But anyway, so she gave me the opportunity to share this with them in my school. So I did that, and that kind of generated a lot of discussion. In the course of that discussion, it was the consensus was that it might be worth making a change whereby instead of the same group coming to the same teacher, the teacher would plan their own session, their own input, and a different group would come every week. So the groups would move around rather than the topic, the subject of the session. So what that meant was that each teacher would effectively deliver or support, facilitate the same learning and teaching for 12 weeks in a row, because they would have different children come in every week. So that got past, the idea was that got over the lack of control almost that the teachers had previously been feeling. And also it took a load off the one teacher who had been planning practically all of the sessions for everybody the previous year. So that made it more democratic in that way, and it made it more participatory for the teachers. My head teacher actually asked me to do a follow-up, having made those changes. My head teacher asked me to kind of investigate if they had resolved the issues that had come up the first time round. And the teachers, it has to be said, were by and large were quite happy with what had happened. And I think it was this kind of control issue. But what I have a concern with, and there was a couple of other people on staff as well, is actually the student leadership element has been lost now to quite a degree. So the participatory and democratic part for the students has been lost, whereas the teachers have I don't want to say clawed back some control, but you know, that might be one way of phrasing it. So I don't know that it really went the way that it was meant to, those changes, because actually it was the student leadership element that when the whole idea of vertical groups, it kind of filtered out from our school, and our head teacher was sharing the idea with other colleagues in the area, in the region. So then we ended up, you know, there was visitors from other schools coming to see, and it was showcased at a regional event and things like this. So there's lots of people interested, and it was the student leadership element that people were fascinated by, you know, how were we managing it and stuff. And personally, I feel that was maybe something that actually got lost with the changes. However, the teachers felt much happier. The P7s and P6s still had the label, but practically they weren't necessarily doing as much of the leading as they had been previously. So qualified success, I guess.
Now, I'll just say we're coming into the last sort of 5 or 10 minutes of tonight's show. It's been absolutely fascinating, Lynn. I've got several sort of questions or points to put to you, and if anybody, of course, is listening to the live stream, then you know, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Just email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or you can put something on Twitter and include the hashtag edutalk. And maybe just at this point, I'll mention that if you go to edutalk.cc, the website, and this is to give you kind of more information around what Lynn's been talking about tonight. If you go to edutalk.cc and then click on Professional Learning for Teachers channel, you will be able to see links to a couple of papers that Lynn wrote around this action research for the Scottish Educational Research Association's Researching Education Bulletin. So I've got links to in fact the entire publication, not just Lynn's paper. Very interesting stuff. And there's also a link there, because Lynn's very kindly put up a reflective question if listeners would like to kind of think further about some of the matters that she's raised tonight. Also on that page, the Professional Learning for Teachers page, you can find out more information about the channel, and also about how Lynn's and other guest talks in the future link to the new General Teaching Council for Scotland standard for career long professional learning. So Lynn, do you pick up now a quote that made its way into one of your papers? A teacher stated, if you think about the topics that we've covered in vertical groups, we are opening up a whole new world to them. I'm just wondering if you can say whether this individual developed or expanded upon what they meant by that. It's quite an interesting statement.
I went back to my transcription, so I've been reading back over that. And so in the first year, so this was when this quote came from, was at the end, towards the end of the first year of vertical groups. And the topics we'd covered were the school's values and visions, being a good neighbour. We did the Right Blether, so we got involved in that and done a lot of feedback around that. Safer Internet Day, Fair Trade, Bullying, the UNCRC Convention for the Rights of the Child, a whole consultation around our sports day and diversity, and we've been involved in the Send My Sister to School campaign. So those are the topics that this my colleague is referring to there. I think what she was referring to is actually to do with the context of the school. In fact, it's located in a deprived area in West Lothian. Free school meals. Our P1 to 3 classes are capped at 18, with a view to keeping contact high, adult to children ratio high in the early years, so to support learning at that level. The aspirations are perhaps not as wide for in amongst families, I might suggest, but I mean, doing the things like the fair trade, for example, there was quite a few of colleagues along that subject was mooted. It was like, oh, that's far too hard for P1s, they'll never get that. Even with support, you know, whatever you do, that's far too big a concept for the children. But actually, in a lot of the drawings from the P1s as well as the other children through the school, they had made some reference, whether it was an attempt at drawing the wee fair trade symbol, or because we based it around something to do with bananas, so there was a lot of bananas in drawings and things like this. So they may not grasp the whole idea, but certainly there was some recognition later on. It came out that a lot of children in the second year, although we hadn't kind of returned to the fair trade as a topic through vertical groups, they still had it in their head because they were still drawing these fair trade symbols. Mm-hmm. Because I reran the same data collection, and a lot of them were still drawing fair trade things and writing about fair trade. Like, we didn't do that in vertical groups this year, but anyway. So I think fair trade for it showed the children that actually decisions that they make do have an impact elsewhere. Yeah. They can make a difference. And the UNCRC, the Convention for the Rights of the Child, unless you inform children that they have these rights, then they're not going to know that they then can, you know, stand up and stand up for themselves in situations if they're not aware of their rights that they do have. So that's where my colleague was coming from, I think, when she made that comment. Actually, we have a duty as teachers, a moral imperative, to do what we can to really broaden our children's horizons and make them realise that they count as a person. I believe that's what her thinking was there.
It seems to be something that you're very passionate about yourself, Lynn, and I'm wondering what lessons you've learned through the process, or even the kind of ongoing cycle of action research. You know, uh-huh. what you've come to learn about pupil consultation. I'll leave that hanging for a moment, because I'm also curious about kind of linked to this. You know, you were talking about, I think you were talking about sort of the initial idea of vertical groups as a way of doing the pupil council better. And, you know, did data come out of these sessions to senior management? Does it still, or did it through the kind of version 2.0, I think you termed it, of vertical groups? Was there information, was there concrete data coming back to management from these sessions that enabled them to improve the school or effect changes the way that you would expect from a pupil council?
What the first year I collected, I gave the pupil council a Venn diagram with pupil council on one, for one of the circles and vertical groups on the other. So the idea being, excuse me, and I entitled it Pupil Voice, this Venn diagram. So the idea was that during one of their pupil council meetings, and they would kind of indicate things about pupil council that only happened in pupil council on the one side, and then the vertical group stuff in the, on the other circle. But you know, there was a crossover. So what was similar about the two things? And actually, the thing that they put in the similar part I'm looking at here is that in the pupil council and in vertical groups, they talk about vertical groups feedback in the pupil council just as much as they do in vertical group. So whereas one of the things that they put that only happens, pupil council is very businessly, is the word that they wrote. So pupil council is very businessly, whereas vertical groups, the word that the phrase here is different reflections happen in vertical groups. Mm-hmm. But in both of those situations, vertical group feedback is discussed. And the head teacher, she kind of was, for some time, she was kind of heading up the pupil council, as it were, and leading it and taking all the notes and organising things. But then she stepped back, and P7s were kind of chairing the pupil council, and she would attend. But then quite often, as this kind of indicates, the pupil council, the children on the pupil council would say, can we take that to vertical groups? See that decision there about dining hall, it comes up on here. Mm-hmm. See that decision about what goes on in the dining hall. Can we take that back to vertical groups? Because they had experience of doing these consultations about sports day and about the school's vision and values. They thought that was perfectly normal. You know, that's the way decision making is, you know, should be done. We take it out to everybody else. You know, we'll report back and we'll think about it, but it's worthwhile getting everybody's ideas. So it has changed. I actually should confess that I'm out of school now on secondment, so I don't know. I'm not sure whether the head teacher did want to scrap. She talked of scrapping the pupil council entirely. Mm-hmm. She's actually moved on since as well, so I don't know whether the pupil council still exists at the moment or not. Yeah. Vertical groups does, so this is fourth year of vertical groups. It's changed, it's morphed somewhat again since. But yeah, it certainly had an impact on pupil voice in the pupil council kind of scheme of things as well. It's much more democratic.
And so just finally, Lynn, then, so what lessons have you learned about pupil consultation?
To be prepared for your assumptions to be challenged. So you've got to be a bit brave and you can't take anything personally. It's like you're asking an honest question. So, you know, be prepared to receive a truthful answer from, you know, that the whoever you're asking. And the more you know, I think, is the more you realise you don't know. But that's interesting then. You do want to carry on. It certainly didn't put me off anyway. And I would say that pupil consultation is really powerful. It really is. 'Cause then you've got evidence that it can direct you, and we're all about the learner and making things better, just trying to get better every day. Does that come from somewhere? Yeah.
You stated in one of your papers, Lynn, that you now have greater agency teacher, having taken part in this psychoeducation research. So what does that mean, and what does it look like?
I just became more confident in what I was doing, and I felt that I really truly understood what was going on in front of me, and that my practice was based on something solid. And it's this idea of self-efficacy. I think I was speaking at a teach meet about my experience of practitioner research, and I use this image, you may have seen it, it's this cat that's looking in a mirror and there's a lion looking back, and I think that kind of encapsulates it. I don't look like I've changed, but I feel empowered. I really do, and I think that's been really important. I mean, I think I mentioned before that I'm now on secondment, and if I hadn't felt this agency and this this confidence in my own understanding of teaching and learning. And if I hadn't engaged with that, then I don't think I would have been successful at the interview for this secondment. This secondment is at national level. I mean, that's a big step to go from your P2 classroom in the middle of a village in Scotland somewhere to a national organisation, and you're representing them and all of this kind of thing. I wouldn't have thought I could do that previously, you know. But I feel it's been really, really powerful. Sorry, I keep referring to that word, but that's what it feels like. Again, it's a bit like what I was saying about the children with their fair trade. You know, choosing to buy something fair trade, it makes a difference to somebody else elsewhere. I feel like I can make a difference, and it's do have something to say. And this is why I'm on here. You know, people can choose to listen or not listen, but you know, I did some research. I've got something to contribute to the wider educational discourse. So a bit greedy like that, I take every opportunity to do so. So I speak at Teach Meets. I came to the ACTS event with the Dutch educators. I got my things published, put forward my things for publication in the Sarah Bulletin. I've spoken at the Sarah, I produced posters for the Sarah conference last year. So I just take every opportunity, you know, because I feel I have something to say. I actually mind if nobody listens, but I'm still going to say it.
Well, Lynn, we've been listening intently tonight. It's been absolutely fascinating, and thank you so much for appearing on the first episode of the first show of the new Professional Learning for Teachers channel. We'll finish up there, folks, and just thank Lynn again. And if anybody wants to get in touch with Lynn, she's on Twitter regularly, and you can also contact her through Radio EduTalk. So thank you very much, Lynn, and best wishes for the future.